We are so close to football. I can almost taste it, and I am so excited for so many reasons. And one of those reasons being, I'm so tired of the talk, and I'm so ready for the on the field stuff to do the talking rather than us, the media people, doing the talking. And there was a whole lot of talking being done last week at SEC Media Day. So today, on today's edition of Locked On LSU, I want to break down what exactly was said about LSU by the SEC Media Days and what I think about it. So we'll break all of that down plus more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first to listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Caroline Fenton. I'm your host, as I am every day. You can find me on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. You can also find us on YouTube at Locked On LSU, plus wherever you get your podcasts, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Locked On LSU is there as well. So I was at SEC Media Days last week, had a great time, met a lot of great people, had a lot of fun. But I think the biggest thing about SEC Media Days, I was so excited leading up to it. And once I got there, I was almost bummed because I was reminded of how close we are to football, yet so far away. We're a little over a month away from kickoff in the Dome on September 4th. But I was getting super excited about, you know, getting into all the talk. You know, the talk was, you know, who's the best, the third best team in the SEC? Who's going to be the best quarterback in the SEC? Who's your favorite in the East? Who's your favorite in the West? I was getting so into these conversations, and all it made me want to do is just watch football, just to have this football season here. And so, of course, at the end of every SEC Media Days, there's a media poll about the order of finish in both the SEC East and the SEC West. Now, Georgia was favored to finish first in the SEC East by an overwhelming margin. I don't think that was a shock to any of us. But I wanted to break down the order of finish in the SEC West. So Alabama was slated to finish first in the West. I don't think that was necessarily a hot take by any means. And that's really the interesting thing heading into this season, is there are very obvious front runners on both sides. The obvious front runner in Georgia in the East, and a very obvious front runner in Alabama in the West. And I think there's also those teams at the bottom that you just kind of expect to be there. I don't expect Missouri to be anything fantastic. I don't expect Vanderbilt to be anything fantastic. So it was really easy to choose the top and the bottom. But those are only four teams. And the remaining 10 teams in the SEC East, you could place them in really any sort of order, and you would have a fair argument for it, both in the East and the West. However you wanted to rank the remaining side of the East, I think was fair. I heard a lot of people saying Tennessee was going to be the second team in the East. I don't necessarily agree with that, but there's a fair argument for it. Had a lot of people arguing that South Carolina was going to be the second best team in the East. I disagree with that even more than I disagree with Tennessee, because I just personally, I don't believe in Spencer Rattler. But if you do, then you can make a fair argument that Spencer Rattler is going to be the key to push South Carolina forward in the East. You can make an argument for any of that middle chunk in the SEC, whether it be Auburn or Mississippi State or Texas A&M or South Carolina or Tennessee or Auburn, whatever it could be. You can make an argument for that middle chunk. So kind of moving forward past that first spot in the SEC West, you have Texas A&M second. I struggle with this one because I think Texas A&M is going to be an interesting wild card. Feels weird saying that I disagree with Texas A&M finishing second in the West after they just beat Alabama last year. But then again, they beat Alabama last year and still ended up going 8-4. There's a quarterback competition going on at Texas A&M, including a quarterback who we know very well, Max Johnson, and also with Zach Calzada at Texas A&M. So this is also indicative that the media isn't necessarily turned away by a quarterback battle. It's more so the order of finish last year and the coach, really. I think that comes away with Texas A&M, is that it felt like the most obvious choice at number two, seeing as though they beat the number one team that everyone thinks is going to be the number one team in the SEC West, and I would agree, this past season. Arkansas at three. That was another team that everyone at SEC Media Days was very high on. I'm big on Sam Pittman. I think he's going to be a great coach. I think KJ Jefferson is going to be, you know, top five quarterback in the SEC this year. But we'll see how Arkansas pans out because their schedule really is murderer's row. So Alabama at 1, Texas A&M at 2, Arkansas at 3, Ole Miss at 4, LSU slated to finish at 5, followed by Mississippi State and Auburn at 6 and 7, respectively. So what I want to break down here is why I think the media slated LSU to finish 5th in the West. Also, to be fair, I put out my projected order of finish. You can find that on my Twitter, at CarolineFenton1. I don't have LSU at 5. I have them higher. It's not a homer take. It's just what I think. But this is why I think the media collectively voted LSU to finish 5th in the West. Number one, this is a what-have-you-done-for-me lately league. That's why Alabama and Georgia are slated to finish first on both of their conferences, is because they both competed for the SEC championship and then the national title. What have you done for me lately? Alabama and Georgia have competed for a national title lately. LSU hasn't been good in the last 2 years. I mean, they were 5-5 in 2020, 6-7 with a bowl loss in 2021, and it really didn't show signs. LSU didn't really show signs of being a great team the last couple of years. And while so many things have changed since then, new coaching staff, new quarterback, so many players coming in from the transfer portal, it's a what have you done for me lately conference, and LSU hasn't finished very high. So I wouldn't necessarily blame the media for not believing that things would be different. And I just mentioned it, another reason why I think the media isn't incredibly high on LSU this year, 5th out of 7th in the West, is because of the change in the coaching staff. I think a lot of people, at least myself, I believe in Brian Kelly, but first year, year one, is hard. Josh Heupel showed that you can show a ton of promise in year one. But Josh Heupel, let's not forget, still went 7-6 on the season last year. A 7 wins isn't necessarily what I think the ceiling is for this LSU team this year. It's also not the floor. So 7-6 would not be my expectation for this year, but also all Tennessee fans are incredibly high on Josh Heupel in year one because of what he was able to show in year one. So I think that Brian Kelly coming in as a first-year head coach, I think a lot of people are saying, okay, get year one under your belt, and then we'll be able to evaluate you a little bit more fairly based off of what you're able to bring to this team. I don't think that the expectations at LSU and Tennessee are – I think they're different. They're absolutely different. I understand that. Tennessee is coming from a much lower place than LSU is, and I mean that with no disrespect whatsoever to Tennessee, but it's the reality. LSU won a national title in 2019, Tennessee won one in 1998. Things are very, very different. I understand that. But it's just the mentality of a year one head coach. The third reason why is because there's so little retention of players. So, I mean, LSU lost their starting quarterback in Max Johnson. And I know Miles Brennan is coming back, but Max Johnson, started last year. Losing your starting corner in Eli Ricks to the transfer portal, who's now in Alabama. One of your best defensive players in Derek Stingley Jr. to the NFL draft. And then between November and April, LSU lost 10 players to the transfer portal. So there is so much turnover of the players who had been installed at this university that bringing so many players in, you know, you could expect a little bit of knocking the rust off a little bit, and that's understandable, and that's okay. The most important thing is, do you see signs of improvement? Do you see a solid foundation being built? That's what I think year one is all about. And also, I mentioned it a little bit earlier too. I think a lot of people are saying, oh, well, LSU wasn't picked to finish very high because nobody knows what this offense is going to look like because there's still a quarterback controversy going on. I also don't like using quarterback controversy. I don't know why I said that. It's not a controversy. It is simply just competition. Because A&M was slated to finish 2nd, they still have a quarterback competition going on. Ole Miss was slated to finish higher than LSU. Ole Miss is not named their starting quarterback yet. So I don't want to use that as a reason why the media would maybe vote LSU lower, because I think that people have their mind made up about LSU no matter who's under center. But those are all the reasons why I think the national media isn't very high on LSU. But coming up next, I want to talk about why I think the real reason is the difference between a good LSU and a bad LSU And while those things that I think the media thinks about LSU are all valid, I think there's a more root cause to why LSU has a very low floor, in my opinion, and a very high ceiling. So we'll get into that coming up next. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. You can find your favorite sports and events at the number one source for odds, lines, and games. You can find reviews and news of every league. They've got Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. You name it, BetOnline.net has got it. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, sports scores, and podcasts. They've got you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Remember that you can subscribe to us on YouTube at Locked On LSU so you don't miss a second of your Locked On LSU content. But just broke down why I think the national media isn't incredibly high on LSU this year. New coaching staff, you know, LSU hasn't done much the past couple of years. They've been a 500 team the past couple of years. Nothing to show for it, at least since 2019. But I don't think that anyone's really talking about the real root of the reasons why some people might not be high on LSU and some people think that LSU could be very good this year. I think LSU is one of those teams that has a low floor, high ceiling, and that's understandable in transition. It's okay. But this is what I think it all comes down to. Can the quarterback, whoever he is, be good enough to make plays to take advantage of LSU's wide receiver core? And also a subset of that is, can this quarterback be good enough to make up for some of the deficiencies on the offensive line? And in my opinion, I think offensive line is easily the biggest question mark on this team. When Brian Kelly spoke at SEC Media Days, he said the exact same thing. He said, you know, the offensive line needs some work. And I don't think that's a mystery to any of us that there's a lot of turnover on the offensive line from 2021 to 2022. And the offensive line wasn't very good last year. And then you bring in Will Campbell, a true freshman and arguably the most important position on the offensive line at left tackle. Of course, he hasn't been named the starter at left tackle, but that's who I think will be the starter at left tackle. I think Will Campbell is an absolute dog. I think that he's going to be, you know, a top player in college football by the time, you know, his 3 to 4 years are up. But he's a true freshman. And, you know, at left tackle, that's asking a lot when he hasn't been a college environment yet. So the offensive line is a big question mark. But can the quarterback make up for the deficiencies at offensive line? Can the quarterback essentially protect himself to be able to take, you know, to take advantage of this wide receiver group? I mean, can they take advantage of Kayshon Boutte, one of the top wide receivers in the SEC, maybe even college football? Dre Jenkins, Jack Besh, Malik Nabers, all really solid players, and all players that are in a wide receiver room that have a year of experience with each other under their belts. You know, Jack Besh coming in last year as a true freshman absolutely made a name for himself. So now that he has his freshman year under his belt and he has a full year of college experience, of bulking himself up, I chatted with him at SEC Media Days, and I'll share that with you all later on this week. But he looks bigger. He feels like he's playing more of a leadership role in this team, and I really do think that's an invaluable element to this wide receiver room. So now that they have a year of experience under their belts as a wide receiver core, wide receiver unit, of course, Kayshon Boutte coming back being healthy, this wide receiver unit is going to be one of the strongest units on this LSU team. This is one wide receiver unit that has talent, unmitigated talent and experience. But if you have a quarterback that's constantly on the ground, constantly getting sacked, then you can't take advantage of those really talented players. So that's a two-parter here. Can this quarterback not only make up for some of the deficiencies that I expect there to be at this offensive line, and maybe this group gets together in fall camp and they get it together and they're able to protect the quarterback? But I'm not expecting that. So can this quarterback protect himself and be able to take advantage of these wide receivers? Because that's what I think is going to be the biggest difference maker on offense. That's what I think is going to be the key to this offense, you know, making fireworks. Because whoever it is, the quarterback needs to take care of the football. The quarterback needs to be able to make plays. And whether you think that that player is Jaden Daniels or Miles Brennan or Garrett Nussmeier or whoever it might be, whoever you think that player is, that's what they need to do. That's what they need to be able to put up points for this team, to make this team successful. is can you get the ball in the wide receiver's hands? Because the wide receivers can make plays. But I also think there's a second part to this as well. And, you know, I talk about the offensive line being, you know, I think the probably the weakest group on this team. I think another big question mark in this team as well is the cornerback group. You're looking at this defensive back group as a whole. You're looking at this DB room. It's comprised almost completely of transfer players. You know, you have Mekhi Garner coming in from ULL. You have Joe Fusha and Greg Brooks coming in from Arkansas. You have Jerick Bernard Converse coming in from Oklahoma State. These are all players with college football experience, SEC experience for two of them, but they haven't played together as a unit. So that's one of my question marks is can this defensive back group come together as a unit? But what I think the strongest group on this team is the defensive line. So the difference between the ceiling and the floor of this team is the defensive line strong enough? And can they do their job enough so you don't have to ask too much of the secondary? You don't have to ask a corner or a safety or whoever it might be to make insane lights out plays. Something that, you know, Derek Seeley Jr., for example, in the past has been able to do. I don't know if this group can do that. And if I had to put my money on it, I would probably lean toward no, because Derek Seeley Jr. is a generational talent. But if the defensive line can do their job and put up enough pressure up front, put pressure on the quarterback and sack the quarterback so that ball's not getting to the backfield, then that allows the defensive backs to give themselves enough time to at least, you know, mesh as a unit and also to not have to make those big plays. I think if this defensive line group can be a force and can be the defensive line that I think they can be, which is a top in the SEC and one of the best in college football, then my concerns about the defensive back group dissipates a whole heck of a lot because I believe in this defensive line. Not that I don't believe in this defensive back room. I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to be. And you don't know what they're going to be either. We don't know what this defensive back group can do together as a unit. So you got to rely on your defensive line. You got to put pressure on the quarterback up front to avoid the guys in the back having to carry too much weight. So overall, my questions. Can the offensive line let the quarterback do what he needs to do? Can the quarterback overcome a weaker offensive line unit? Can the quarterback be able to take advantage of this unmitigated talent in the wide receiver room? And can the defensive line be the backbone of the defense? Which I think they can. I think all of these things are very possible. I think all of these things, you know, whoever the quarterback might be, they can do this. This wide receiver room can absolutely make big plays. This defensive line unit can put pressure on the quarterback. The question is, are they going to be able to put all of those things together and by when? You know, because week one matters. You can't get, I heard Brian Kelly say this and I loved this, you can't get to December if you don't play well in September, October. So those are my big burning questions. You put all those things together, this can be a top team in the SEC. But coming up next, LSU just signed, or not signed, but had a new commitment in the 2024 class. What does that mean for the future of LSU football? Not just in recruiting, but on the field as well. I want to get into that coming up next. LSU gets yet another commitment from four-star tight end Tavion Galloway from Chillicothe. I believe that's what you say, Chillicothe, Ohio, in the 2024 class. That 2024 class has been rolling commitments in. They're not the second-ranked class in the class of 2024. I also want to preface this, and I discussed this with John Garcia Jr. yesterday. Highly recommend you check out that episode because he has such wonderful insight about just the recruiting world in general. I never put too much stock into a recruiting class 2 years away. He's going into his junior year of high school. I mean, we've seen so many things change just in the past month in the 2023 class overall, you know, in all of college football, not necessarily LSU, but so many things can change in these next 2 years. So I don't want to put too much stock into him as a player and what he's going to be able to do once he gets here in 2024. But I think there's an interesting storyline here. So first and foremost, who is Tavion Galloway? Again, a tight end out of Ohio. He's the top-ranked player in the state of Ohio in that recruiting class in 2024. But get this. 6'5", 230 pounds. He is going into his junior year of high school. This dude is just an absolute monster, just size alone. Monster. And I mean, that's, you know, as going into his junior year, he's what, 16, 17 years old. Think about what he's going to look like 18, 19, 20 years old once he gets in that LSU weight room and once he puts on a little bit more weight and he's able to kind of maneuver that a little bit. I mean, God, he's huge. He's going to be huge. He's going to be such a dominant force in this LSU team. I say that as I literally just said, I don't want to put too much stock into him, but I think there's a very interesting point here because when he explained why he chose LSU, this is what he said. He said, Coach Kelly, he uses the tight ends like insanely well. And then also just Coach Denbrock, how they use the tight ends. That's just like the ultimate blessing to even be able to be in a position to be coached by great guys like that. I just got to continue to grind. So whenever I get there, they can continue to develop me and hopefully make the league one day. LSU doesn't have a rich history of producing NFL tight ends. It's just not how this offense has been constructed. Brian Kelly, however, Mike Denbrock, however, they developed tight end university at Notre Dame. And that's exactly, and Tavion Galloway literally just told you that's why he's committing to LSU, is to play for an outstanding and established tight end coach and coordinator in Brian Kelly and Mike Denbrock. So I don't think that this is going to be the end of several tight end commitments, not just in the 23 or 24 class, but LSU's locked in Brian Kelly for quite some time now. I think you're going to start seeing a whole heck of a lot more 4- and 5-star tight end talent want to come to LSU because they want to play for Brian Kelly. I mean, just look in the past how Brian Kelly used tight ends at Notre Dame. In this past season, 2021, Michael Meyer, 71 receptions, 840 yards. I mean, those are wide receiver numbers. The tight end at Notre Dame and in Brian Kelly's offense is used like a top pass catcher. I mean, he had overwhelmingly more receptions, almost double their leading wide receiver, Kevin Austin, who had 48 receptions and 888 yards. Their wide receiver had only about 50 more yards than their tight end. And also this past year, Notre Dame tight end Tommy Tremble was taken in that year's draft, 2021 draft, in the third round. In the 2021 draft, yeah, that's right. In 2019, Cole Kmet, 515 yards on a team with Chase Claypool, a certified starting wide receiver in the league. He had over 1,000 receiving yards that season. So Cole Kmet was the second leading receiver on that team. He was a second-round draft pick. I look at Kyle Rudolph, who was a Notre Dame and Brian Kelly product, second-round draft pick. Tyler Eifert, again, Notre Dame product, Brian Kelly product, first-round draft pick. Tight ends don't go in the first round unless you're Kyle Pitts. Tight ends generally do not go in the first round. Tight ends generally don't get 800 yards receiving. But there are so many tight end recruits that view Brian Kelly and what he's been able to do with the tight end position. And they want to be a part of it. And the tight end room as constructed, I look at Jack Mashburn and Cole Taylor and Nick Storrs, who's coming off of medical retirement. And the tight end room isn't necessarily stacked at LSU. You know, Cole Taylor, we'll see, you know, what he can do. But the tight end position has never been a go-to position, at least as of late, in these LSU offenses. So I think it's going to be really fun to see how Brian Kelly is able to integrate his philosophy of tight end usage into this currently constructed LSU offense. And that's another thing I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that, you know, year one with a new coach, it's going to take some time. You know, he's going to have to get acclimated. The players are going to have to get acclimated. First year coaches, it takes time. That's not a mystery. I think another reason why we're going to have to give Brian Kelly time. And I'm not expecting a 6-win season. If that's what happens, I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world, but that's not what I'm expecting. If the over-under win total for LSU is set at 6.5, I'm taking the over. But we're going to have to give Brian Kelly some time to get his guys in here and to be able to get the talent into LSU so he can use them the way that his offensive philosophy has worked in the past. So let him get his guys in here. Let him get his 6'5", 230-pound tight end in here in 2024 and see what he's able to do with it. And I mentioned this on the podcast with John Garcia Jr. Again, check it out. He's amazing. It's going to be really fun to see this marriage of an LSU offense that is known for, you know, just hard-nosed grindstone running backs, talented wide receivers, and also bringing in Brian Kelly's philosophy that he's had success with in the past at Notre Dame. You piece those two together, whoo, you got yourself a pretty fun offense to watch. But again, it takes time. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Now, you can get more on the SEC by making Locked On SEC your second listen. Every day, host Chris Cordy and the local experts of Locked On take you across the SEC in 30 minutes. Make Locked On SEC your second listen. That's Locked On SEC.